So when one has a buddhic perception of reality, that moves into manas, mind, which is the visualized idea of the buddhic perception appearing in the mind, appearing translated into thought. Because buddhic perception is beyond thought, which is why teachers speak in riddles and paradoxes. Because it's unconveyable in words. Hence meditation, mudras, dance, and music. So the visualized idea seized by the mind is what the buddhic perception evolves into. And that turns into what's called the mental shape of words. The mental shape of words. It takes the child a bit of time before they're able to begin forming the mental shapes of words. We have to give them the mental shapes through sound. Doggy. You're pointing over there at that perception, and you, every time you point at that perception, you make the sound, doggy. And pretty soon the child is able to visualize that sound in terms of a thought. Doggy. And then, alas, the poor child thinks it knows what it's looking at, because it can make a sound about it, the same sound that other people make when they're looking at the same thing. Therefore, we can do something called communicate. What are we communicating about? Nothing. We're just saying that perception I call dog, and so do you. So what do you think of the dog? Oh, not much. It's not a purebred. You know, some images are pure and some are mixed. So if you want a pure one, you got to go to the American Kennel Club. Get a pure perception. It comes with a piece of paper guaranteeing that it's a pure perception. Usually there's a lineage. It'll tell you all the names going back forever of mom and dad and granddad and great-granddad and great-mom and all. It's all there. A whole lineage of perceptions. Because in the end, there's nothing but perceptions. I mean, again, as we mentioned earlier, if you find something other than a perception, let someone kind of important know about it. Because no one's found anything that isn't a perception yet. And we're not speaking just in terms of external perceptions of the external world. I mean, our thoughts are perceptions, our dreams are perceptions, our feelings are perceptions. There's nothing that's not a perception. So if a person really likes having perceptions, then stay away from Shiva. He's not into it. Not where it's at, perceiving images or thought forms. So Shiva, there's actually a text, a spiritual text in the Hindu tradition about Shiva, or in which Shiva is speaking. And in this text, he very strongly condemns any kind of organized or institutionalized religion or any other kind of organized structure. He just condemns it. He wants to burn them up. He warns us, don't go there. Don't get caught in categories and institutions and religious structures and rituals. They're meaningless, says Shiva. Consequently, as we mentioned earlier, he isn't liked by the other gods and goddesses. Because most of them have like rituals and ceremonies, you know, all this stuff, very sacred. And Krishna says, the hell with it. Get rid of all that stuff. It's just in your way. It's in your way. All those sacred rituals and ceremonies. So Shiva's not very popular with organized religion, whether it be Hindu or Buddhist or Christian or any other. Jesus wasn't real hot on it either. Got killed for it. He's supposed to be, you know, Vishnuing it. Not destroying it, burning it up. All right, so we get the mental shape of words. And where does that occur, according to this? In what they call the vital breath, or prana. So mental shape of words has to do with breath. And that gets pretty mystical. Or, very down to earth, we're all breathing. If we weren't breathing, we wouldn't be able to form mental shapes of words. Consequently, the connection to breath. So then there are people who will tell you, okay, it's all connected to breath, so I'll just do some pranayama, which is various kinds of postures in a certain yogic tradition having to do with breathing. Learning to control one's breathing. I mean, to an extraordinary extent. And to the degree it's controlled, higher, more expansive states of consciousness can be reached. But Shiva doesn't like pranayama. He doesn't like exercises that have to do with controlling and manipulating the breathing, even though they're doable. Why doesn't he like them? Because when you die, you haven't gained anything. When you keep breathing, it all disappears. All those nice states of consciousness you were enabled to experience, they're gone when you quit breathing. So you wasted a whole lifetime. Can't take anything out of it. There's Shiva again, burning everything up. So he's saying, don't waste your time with organized religion. Don't waste your time with priests, ministers, popes, you know, shaman, you know, New Age healers, experts on astral travel, people who can open your third eye with a nail and a hammer. It's been tried. Unfortunately, the casualties are high. Okay, so you got the vital breath going on, which enables us to have visualizations of thoughts or ideas. And that turns into the elements of which we're composed, of which everything is composed, even solar systems.